Hello, welcome to this week's Opening Bell. I'm boxing news editor Tris Dixon. Although I did record a podcast with Eddie Hearn yesterday, which has gone out live through our different mediums, I'm here back with Matt Christie, back by popular demand. Matt, they couldn't stand without you, it seems.
Well, I'm not surprised. Yeah, it's been absolutely insane on Twitter, hasn't it? How many people were really upset that I wasn't involved yesterday.
I started hemorrhaging followers, you know, every minute. All joking aside, it was good to get Eddie Hearn in and speak to him. It was a sort of chance encounter, really. So we just took the opportunity to ask some questions while he was here. But Matt, obviously we've moved on to the next issue, but let's just have a look at the issue that we've just churned out, and this is it. It's the Just Do It issue with Mayweather and Golovkin on the front. And we've looked at 20 fights that we would like in 2014. Matt, if you were a matchmaker, could make any one fight for one night only in any venue, what match would you put? Who would be in it and where would you put it?
It would have to be, I would put it probably, I'm a big fan of Las Vegas being the fight capital of the world. I'd like to see, I think MGM Grand is a fantastic venue. Kovalev, Adonis Stevenson may not do great business there, but let's imagine it would for a second. And I just think that fight is, out of everything that you could make, I think it's the one that's perhaps the most reliable in terms of doing what it says on the tin in terms of producing thrills and spills, or however long it lasts. So for me, that'd be what I'd go for if I couldn't mention Mayweather and Pacquiao, which I'm still.
Because who wouldn't want to put that on? The person who could finally get those two in the
Well, exactly, together. Exactly. I just think for as much as the attention that it would shine on boxing would be as good as the fight itself.
Let me just throw a couple of these fights out to you. How many do you reckon? Like three or four?
Yeah.
Okay. And let me see. What type of fight... And all of these answers, by the way, so for the 20 fights, let me just specify, if you haven't picked up the magazine yet, we're asking why the fight should happen, what type of fight would it be, what chances there are of it happening, what impact it would have on the sport, and who would win. So, what type of fight would we get if we managed to get Maidana and Lucas Matisse in there together?
I think it'd be a tactical boxing match, a long, long feeling out process. It's that like might take 6 or 7 rounds.
Two Argentine Pernell Whitters in there.
Yeah, a lot of nimble footwork. You know, you'd be wowed by the defensive mastery, I think, in that fight. No, it'd be an absolute, be very similar to Kovalev and Stevenson. It'd be hell for leather, wouldn't it? Although I think it would probably last longer than Stevenson and Kovalev.
Okay, all right. Sergio Martinez, Miguel Cotto. Who wins?
It's a tough one, isn't it? It's a tough one. You'd have to think. I remember when Cotto went up to like middleweight, I thought perhaps that was a step too far for him. I remember when he was being trained by Manny Stewart at the time, and Manny Stewart was quietly a bit concerned that might be a step too far. So I think middleweight, and also with his advancing years, you'd have to favour Martinez. But on the flip side, Martinez hasn't looked good at all, has he, recently? I think what that would be a great spectacle. I think that really, really would be a fantastic spectacle if they staged that in New York.
Two fights ago, Martinez fought Chavez and he looked sensational for 11 rounds.
Yeah.
So, okay, what impact on the sport would it have if Danny Garcia fought Timothy Bradley? What impact would it have on the sport if Danny Garcia fought Timothy Bradley?
What impact on the sport? Probably not a... Not a huge one, but it's the kind of fight that the sport needs. It's two fairly young, unbeaten guys, and it is really the. Sadly, I don't think it would get that much attention, and hence why it may not happen.
I suppose the only way it would transcend the sport, and it's a bit of a harsh way of looking at it, is if they basically build it as the winner gets Floyd.
Yeah, it'd have to be something like that.
And then there'd be some attention, particularly, you know, if it was on a Mayweather undercard or something like that. We'll see. Okay, I won't give away what the numbers one or two are. Let's go over some familiar ground. Actually, no, let's do something different. I was going to say about a Froch Groves rematch, but let's do something different. We don't speak about the heavyweights too often these days because not a lot's been happening. But in our top 10, amongst our top 10 fights, we do have Vladimir Klitschko and Deontay Wilder. Break it down for me, Matt.
I mean, on current evidence, it's, you know, I mean, I was surprised it came out that high. I think that's almost as if Wilder gets a, you know, some momentum behind him, a couple of impressive wins, and at the end of the year, it's a bit of a heavyweight showdown that perhaps the whole world at last can talk about. As it stands at the moment, Wilder has got to be, he's a threat, he's an absolute, he hits, I think he's probably arguably the hardest hitter in the division with that right hand. Crude as you like, and as things stand at the moment, you'd have to think that Klitschko would be able to measure that and would probably stop him in the first half of the fight.
Having boxed his head off.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, interesting take on that. I am not a Wilder convert by any stretch of the imagination, but I think, do you know what, he could be one of those fighters who's so crude, it's effective for him.
Yeah.
And it's going to make him difficult to beat because he's one of those guys where if he doesn't know what he's going to do, how does the opponent know what he's going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
It could be something like that, that he thrives upon. You know, maybe it's that kind of unpredictability that can lead him to bigger and better things. But we'll see. I mean, it's one thing saying he's crude, but we don't actually know for sure if there's real method to the madness yet.
No, it's true.
And
we haven't
had to find it out.
Yeah, and it's an accusation as well that was kind of leveled at George Foreman when he was on the way up and when he fought Joe Frazier. I mean, there was very few people picking Foreman to win that fight, let alone have a chance. And Foreman went in there and blew Frazier away. And I know Klitschko and Frazier are two completely different beasts, but it's a similar.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at the skills, you know, look at Michael Moore and George Foreman.
Yeah.
You know, and certainly when you look at the finishing punch.
Yeah.
You know, crude as you like, really, wasn't it? It was almost like a little slap round the chops.
Yeah.
But obviously it was, you know, one of the shots that's been heard into eternity. Okay, so that's a really interesting feature, guys. I'd really like you to check it out in the magazine. It'd be really good to hear your thoughts about what fights you'd like to see and which of our lists you agree with or disagree with. It's been a team effort getting that together. When I look at team effort as well, we've got a shot of the week from the premiere of the new De Niro and Stallone movie, Grudge Match. Matt, you went along to that. We were expecting the worst. Should people who go to that film expect the worst?
Expect the worst, you'll have a pleasant surprise. Expect an award winner and you'll be disappointed. I went along really thinking it was dreadful. I remember being in New York at the end of last year and it was heavily promoted in Times Square and also through the boxing promotion. I thought, what on earth is this about? I kind of read the synopsis that it was 260-somethings coming back to have to settle the score in a grudge
match. Like Fennec and Azuma Nelson.
Yeah, and I thought that sounds even worse than what I'd imagined. And I was pleasantly surprised. It's amusing enough. It's not pure slapstick all the way through. Pulls on the heartstrings now and again. Quite regularly had me chuckling. And the fight scenes at the end, although I can't really think of a film off the top of my head that gets them right. It's thrilling enough stuff to keep you entertained. I'll give it a solid 3 stars out of 5.
What was the sort of feedback from the people there like?
It was mixed. The vast majority though were impressed with the film. The majority of people that I spoke to enjoyed it. Bearing in mind though that when I was speaking to these people that Robert De Niro and Sylvester Stallone were not a million miles away, so they're not going to be shouting from the rooftops that it was a pile of rubbish. But
you had to check yourself then, didn't you?
I did have to check myself then. I'd recommend it. I would. I'd recommend it as just great fun.
Yeah, okay. So that's out in the cinemas in a week or two's time in the UK.
Yeah.
Do you know the exact date?
24th, I think. Is that Friday?
Okay, possibly. This weekend, while we're looking ahead, there is a monstrous fight in Canada. Yeah. A really, really big fight. Lucien Boutte takes on Jean Pascal. Has implications at light heavyweight, possibly at super middleweight as well. We'll have to see. Both guys on the website have been calling out Karl Froch. I spoke to both camps last week for the preview. Don't really want to say which way we're going to go on the podcast, but it's a huge fight. Matt, I've got one question for you, though. Pascal and Lucien Boutte are both former super middleweights. when this fight was first mentioned 2 or 3 years ago, they were sort of arguably at the peak of their powers. Now, however, Butte's had a crushing loss to Carl Froch. Pascal has had, he's been at the wrong end of Bernard Hopkins' mind games twice. Neither seem to be the same fighter that they were before those rivalries. Now they're meeting each other at light heavyweight, and arguably there's more at stake than ever before. Will the increased poundage, the damaging experiences both of have undergone or suffered, and the age make it a better fight now than it would have been 2 or 3 years ago?
Probably not. Probably not. It's difficult, but it's a really good question. You'd have to say that you'd
want. Thanks,
mate.
I've been working on that.
I sense that with the build-up. But yeah, no, it's. Potentially, it could do. We do sometimes see when fighters are kind of they're a little bit war torn that a better fight emerges. But I think I'd rather see them both at their peak. Lucien Butte, perhaps without those nagging doubts, which are undoubtedly going to be there in his mind. And Pascal again with that kind of reckless abandon that a lot of boxing fans was the reason why a lot of boxing fans fell in love with him in the first place. But I think this is a fascinating encounter, and it is fascinating because of where they both are in their careers.
Who do you think is more psychologically scarred? Pascal from basically, although he got a draw in the first fight and then lost to Hopkins, widely thought of as two losses for Pascal. But Hopkins is a guy who's fought people like Trinidad Pavlik and guys who've never been the same again. You can maybe see Tavoris Clow going down the same way. Or Lucien Butte, who was so badly damaged by Carl Froch. Which one do you think has the more damage?
My first instinct is that it's Lucien Butte, and I'll stick with that. I do, but I mean that loss was. It was quite harrowing in a way to watch because it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal, and it is the kind of loss. And Froch is quite happy to tell anybody that will listen that he's ruined Lucien Butte. But I think that might well be the case. I think with all the guys that you mentioned that Bernard Hopkins has ruined, your Pavliks, your Clouds, etc., your Trinidads and what have you, I would say that Pascal, providing his body is able to cope with the injuries that it's suffered recently, I would say he's the least damaged out of all of those Bernard Hopkins victims. I would say he'll be able to come back the stronger. And I would say going into this fight, and obviously just my opinion, that Pascal is mentally in better shape than his opponent.
This fight was obviously slated for May last year before Butte had to pull out with some bone splints in his hand. I was with Pascal in Vegas before the one. it was for the Guerrero fight, actually. I was with Pascal in 50 Cent's gym. Me not dropped too many names here. There was Chad Dawson, Gamboa was there. And Pascal just seems to be one of those guys who wouldn't be fazed by what's happened with Hopkins. It was amazing. He was in marvellous condition, and he was sort of ready, very determined. And I think he's drawn confidence from how Lucien Butte was routed by Froch. I think obviously you compare them both in their fights against Froch, very different outcomes, very different results, types of fights certainly. And I think Pascal's been really heartened by how destroyed Butte was that night. I think that's given him added confidence that he might have lost after the Hopkins fight.
Yeah, and it will do. And if you look at that fight, I mean, I remember the first round of that Froch Butte fight was really entertaining stuff. And for a couple of rounds, Butte was in it, but it was quite obvious as well early on that Butte was there and he was there to be hurt. And when you've witnessed an opponent taking that kind of beating and also struggling when we're under pressure, then it just will surely give you so much added confidence.
Hmm. We've mentioned how big the fight is in Canada. It will be huge. Both camps are well aware of that. They've been in Montreal. Pascal flew over Friday night into Saturday, so he's been there since Saturday, and Butte's been training up there. It's huge, but does a fight with Adonis Stevenson for the winner, is that a bigger fight, or is this a bigger fight because it's arguably a better fight? Because the bookies have Pascal a very narrow favourite, Butte a slender underdog. against Stevenson, he'd be a significant favourite, wouldn't he, against these two, you'd think?
Yeah, you'd think. I think for the neutral or whatever, this is perhaps, and probably, to be fair to kind of Canadian fight fans, this is probably the more appealing matchup. These are guys that have been around for a lot longer and what have you. However, say if Pascal goes out, knocks Boutte out in 3 or 4 rounds, or vice versa, then the winner of this bout against Stevenson then is really, really, really a hot ticket seller.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right. And those guys, it's kind of like the German monopoly at the moment. The big money for them is in Canada at the moment, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And HBO has got an interest. They're obviously screening the fight this weekend. They've obviously got an interest in Stevenson too. So, you know, they've got the money from the USA. So, you know, it's all about bums on seats and all the rest of it in Canada. Yeah. It's a great fight though. I mean, it's not often there are great big fights in January, is there? But this is like a mouth-watering fight, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Really looking forward to it. Really looking forward to it. It'll be interesting to see what it is. It is one of those though, almost where winner takes it all, because you would imagine the loser will have not many options left.
Well, they'd have to move right down in class again, wouldn't they, to get back up to that level. What sort of fight is it? 50-50 fight or 60-40 Pascal?
I think, yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. If you were to take, thing is, we've put so much emphasis on the Cole Frotch performance with when considering Boutte's chances in this one, which is perhaps unfair, but I still think Pascal is rightly the favourite, and perhaps 60-40 I think is probably about right for me.
Do you know what, with Lucien Boutte, I'll just add this in closing about that particular fight. With Lucien Boutte, I think what concerns me the most still isn't, funnily enough, the Frotch fight. It's the fight he had with Andrade.
Oh, in the last round.
Yeah, and I mean that I still can't get that out of my head. And you know, we knew what Andrade's level was. And I think that's a massive cause for concern.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if Lucien Boutte doesn't start well and start putting rounds in the bank, he's going to be banging trouble.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And when you look at Boutte's record, he's fought, I don't know, the only guy better than Pascal on his record is Frotch, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's probably the second best guy he's fought.
Yeah.
A weight class that he struggled in against Denis Gratchev in his last fight. So I don't know. We never know, do we? Never know for sure. That's obviously the beauty of the game. But it's, in fact, I'm starting to make it 80-20 now.
95-5.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, so plenty of other stuff happening, though. What have you got going on out there at the moment with the website?
There's a lot going on at the website. I mean, it's an interesting way to kind of spend your days is that website, because you get various press releases. You're also kind of phoning people up and finding things. I mean, the thing that I was noticing in my inbox this morning is that Nicaraguan lunatic Ricardo Mayorga is plotting a comeback via reality television, which to some might seem like entertainment. To me, it sounds like hell. But it is various things like that you're involved with on a day-to-day basis.
And yesterday, Darren Barker announced his retirement from professional boxing. What school of thought are you? Sad that it's over, or good? Or, you know, pleased that he's walked away when he has?
I'm pleased because he's. I mean, I spoke to him at the Grudge Match press conference last week.
That's when you were hanging out with De Niro and Stallone.
Yeah, Sly on one arm, De Niro on the other.
We're going to be all, it's going to be like your equivalent of the one now, isn't it?
No, not really, because I didn't really get to speak to either of them, to be perfectly honest, which was a bit of a...
You didn't quite get a picture with De Niro either, did you?
No, I was queuing, there was various press there hoping to have their photograph taken with him. And then it was like, yeah, okay, we've got one photo left. He's really got to go. So I kind of barged to the front, had my camera ready. He's handed my camera to Spencer Fearon, who was going to take a picture of Robert De Niro and I. And Robert De Niro, correctly, some might say, picked out Natasha Jonas and opted to have his picture taken with her instead.
Yeah, not much I can say to that, apart from, you know, if I was a man in De Niro's shoes, I think I know what I'd go for as well.
But the thing is, what and whether he was aware of it or not, if you look at our shot of the week, he's already had his picture taken with Natasha Jonas. And I'm nowhere to be seen in that, so 'tis loss.
Yeah, I wonder if he can even sleep now he's back.
I doubt it.
So, did you at least give him a copy of the magazine?
I tried to. No, I didn't give Robert De Niro one because, in all honesty, he didn't seem that interested. I kind of did fling one in Sylvester Stallone's direction because he was kind of talking about Harry Greb and Tiger Flowers and various things at the press conference. He was highlighting the fact that he did know a thing or two about boxing, and he obviously does keep up with the sport, so I thought that he would be more interested.
His brother Frank is a massive fight fan. Lives out in Los Angeles. He's got a massive collection of memorabilia and stuff. Frank Stallone, I think he had a walk-on part in a couple of the early Rockies. But yeah, he's well involved in entrenched in boxing. Is Frank Stallone? I know, obviously, Sly's always had a massive interest too.
Dan Barker.
So yeah, that's where we were with Darren. So yeah, Darren, are you pleased to see him go when he's gone?
I am pleased to see him go because I sense that he didn't want any part of trying to get fit and trying to put himself through a camp again. And although potentially he could be, you know, saying goodbye to pocketfuls of cash, he's going with his head held high. Ultimately, you sense that he just wanted to win that world title and put some money in his bank account. He's done that. He dedicated that to his late brother Gary, which meant the world to him. And now he said, you know, one of the things that he kept repeating was that, you know, the family is important to him. His family now look at him. He feels like he's made them proud, whereas a year or so ago he felt like he let them down. And there's a lot to be said for that peace of mind that Darren Barker's got, because not many people will have that at any point in their lives. Darren Barker's now got it. He's financially secure, and, you know, good luck to him.
I think I try not to gloat about my successes or predictions too much, but there was something about Darren Barker, and I think I remember talking to you about it in one of these podcasts before the Gill fight.
Yeah.
Well, I always knew it was going to be his fate to win a world title. There was something about it, and I remember the first time watching him as a pro, and I remember his story beforehand as well. There was always something about Darren Barker that I was convinced, and I can't say this very often, but convinced that, but one way or another, he was going to get a world title. When he was matched with Martinez, I thought, obviously, it's not going to happen. Martinez, a different class. And then when Golovkin started lurking on the peripheries and the belts were stuck in Germany, I was just thinking, well, okay, maybe I was wrong. And then when Eddie Hearn and Matchroom nipped in to get that Gill fight, it was almost like the stars aligned for that one night, and everything happened with the body shot, with Gary and winning the title. And it was kind of like, I don't know, there was nothing about that fight that surprised me. It just felt like I've been watching from afar. It felt like I've been watching a movie, on someone's life, and it just felt like that was going to be, you know, the final scene, as it were. Of course, we've gone on and had different things with Sturm, now the retirement, but you know, there was that element of fate about the Darren Barker journey, and it's been fascinating to watch because the stakes have always been so high from a personal and emotional perspective for Darren, who really, really struggled, obviously, to come to terms with the loss of his brother Gary, who died in a car crash, and his tight-knit family rallied around and have done tremendously well to give Darren the support that he's needed to make it to the very top of the game. And he's walking away. I mean, the one thing I thought, where Darren was sounding a bit like a mercenary ahead of the Sturm fight, saying it's all about money now and securing his future, as if it was all about money, then I figured that he might stick around for that Sturm rematch, which Eddie Hearn said in the podcast yesterday, you know, where the money would have been about half as good as it was in Germany, which I'm guessing would have still been about £500,000. It's only a guess, but and then obviously you could do a lot more with that, but then, you know, there's the practical elements where Darren, you know, whether he could get through another training camp, and obviously you need to get through a training camp to make the weight. You know, it's weighing it all up, isn't it? I know he's spoken to you about having difficulties running around with his little girl and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And he was saying the thing that concerned him more than anything else was not the fact whether he would fight again or whatever, was the fact that, you know, his young daughter was pelting around the place and he just could not keep up with her, and he didn't want to be in a position when he was a bit older, that he was completely unfit and what have you with his family. And that's That's completely understandable. Completely understandable. If he's in a position to enjoy that family life, then, you know, more power to him.
He did text me last night, actually, and he said one of his highlights, he said nothing gave him more satisfaction. I don't actually believe that, but nothing gave him more satisfaction than picking up Boxer News on a Thursday and reading his final reports. Yeah. Funny enough as well, and it sort of segues nicely onto stuff for next week. Danny Flexen's done a big interview with Prince Nassim Hamed for next week. We've got a Naz special. So somewhat like the Tyson issue that we produced last week, it's been really popular. We're doing a Nassim Hamed special. And Naz actually said to Danny Flexen that sort of highlights in his career were going, what was it? He said one of some things that he really liked was whenever he was on the front of Boxing News.
Yeah,
it was like a personal high point for him,
yeah.
Which is great for us. And I remember there's a story, just to bore our listeners one more time in closing. There's a story about Vladimir Klitschko when he lost to, I think, Lamont Brewster, and he was on the cover of Boxing News, and it had the headline Broken Men on it, and how, you know, he wasn't going to be the same fighter. He said he pinned that up in the gym, and that inspired him never to be on the front again in that context. And he never has been. So it's great that the fighters of that level, Naz, Klitschko, Darren Barker, all respect Boxing News, the brand, the publication. Hopefully that will continue to be the case for many, many, many generations on as we hit our 105th year.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I'm doing the 10 count at the moment, and I think in relation to Roy Jones, his birthday today, I'm going to kind of do it with fighters that perhaps should consider retirement. One of them, as much as it pains me, will be Bert Cooper, but maybe he'll read it and it'll inspire him to make this comeback and win the world heavyweight title.
Okay, right, thanks for joining us, guys. I think I'll leave Matt to his daydreams. And it's been a pleasure, as always. I hope you enjoyed the Eddie Hearn podcast yesterday. Matt and I will be back next week, all being well. And we'll be catching up on what happened between Boutte and Pascal, and looking forward to a massive weekend of fights, where back in action there's the likes of Canine Bundridge, Mikey Garcia, Marco Hook, Curtis Stevens, and many, many more, not including Bert Cooper. Goodbye.